it's recording. That's the first time that I do that, so I don't know what happens next. But I launch the recording, so I should be able afterwards to put it online somewhere. Okay. So can you is the text big enough on the screen? Can you read it?
Yes,
I can read it well.
Okay, good. So maybe 2 points on the Titanic. So first, the scatter plot. So you just had to do basically the same thing as the example with the Anscombe Quartet. Maybe something you may wonder on this code here for the two axis. So the scales, linear scale there, you have to understand, in fact, that's a part of a mapping. So it will transform some input domain onto an output domain. And linear is basically a linear transformation. And the output will be pixels. So we define the output using the range function, and it takes two values, so the beginning of the range and the end of the range in pixels. That for scales, it's more general than just transforming values into pixels. It can be used to transform nominal or ordinal values into any visual property, like the size, like the color, or things like that. So you will see in the D3 documentation there are various scales that allows to do some mapping between data attribute and visual variables. So we set the range. We can set that early because we know that our output range will be in pixel, and we already know the pixels, so that the width of the graph and the height of the graph. I will explain the logarithmic scale afterwards. Okay. And then when the data is loaded, so this part does some conversion so that we have edges in as numbers, first as numbers. And this part there does some filtering. In fact, if you look at the data, the data set is not as clean as we would like. And some passengers don't have an edge or didn't pay. In fact, or don't remember.
Professor?
Yes.
Just a question. What is this plus before d.age and d.fare?
Yeah, it's a conversion because in the TSV file, everything is text. And in JavaScript, a way to convert some text into a number is to add a plus before it. Because implicitly it will do some conversion. Maybe you know, or maybe you don't know, but JavaScript is very permissive about typing. So it can convert some text into numbers or some numbers into text. And the plus there is just a trick to convert text numbers in text into numbers, real numbers. So then you will have the real value of the edge.
Yeah. Okay, but how do you know when it's a float, it's an integer?
Because if you look at the data set, you know that the record. Ah, okay. You mean
yeah, the type.
The type here, in fact, in JavaScript, you, if you really care about the type, you can use more specific functions, but numbers are not that typed in JavaScript. You know, you have numbers, and they are float numbers.
Okay.
So we'll consider everything as float. Yeah. And then, so we know for the scales onto which part of the screen they will project. So they have the range set. And what we will define now is their domain, and that's the input range. So since we have something linear, the lowest value of the domain will be mapped onto the lowest value of the range. And the highest value of the domain will be mapped onto the highest value of the range. So it's just a linear transformation between the two. And to set our domain, we know for sure that the lowest value is zero, so we can use it. And for the other end of the scale, we can compute it from the data. So now we have the data set. So our data there is a list of objects that we have created from the real data set. So they all have a name, age, fair, and survive property, and we can use those properties. And the magic there, so these three have a lot of functions, and here it's a function to take the maximum. We look into the data, and we can say which field of the data we will use to compute the maximum. So here, for each element, so it's a D. D is one element of the data, and for one element of the data, we look at its edge. So now we have set a domain that goes from zero to the maximum edge. And the next function is not necessary, but nice will transform our scale so that the bounds are nice. So it means if you have if the maximum is something like 49.3, it will round it to the closest nice value, maybe 50 or 52 or 55. So that's a kind of magic function to have a nice bounds for the axis. And for the fair, maybe we don't know the minimal fair. So here we use the extend function of D3 that get the minimum and the maximum. And then that's the magic of D3, this part. We, in our SVG element, we select things that do not exist yet. And why we do that? Because in fact, D3 is designed for interaction, and when we will want to add new elements or to merge some new elements to elements that are present, this will be helpful. But for now, just think of it as creating some elements on in the SVG. We set the data, and you have to think of it as a loop. For each element of the data, we will do what is next in this code. So what we'll do, we will append G element. So G element is a group in SVG, and we'll set the class for this group to a passenger, just to be able to, just in case we want to change those elements later, we then will be able to select them using this class attribute. But in this visualization, it's not useful, but it's a good practice to when you select element using So the dot notation here is to select a specific class, and then you set the theme class so that the elements in the group are using this specific class. And then we move this group to a specific position, and the position is computed. So for each element, D is one record of the data. And the position is computed from this element. So the backticks there tells JavaScript that in this string, so it's a string, but in the string, there will be parts that JavaScript will have to compute. So those parts are the part there with the dollar sign and the brackets. So the part inside should be computed and then should be substituted for instead of having the text there, JavaScript will compute the value. X is our scale, and it will, so it will transform the edge into a pixel coordinate, and Y will transform the fair into a pixel coordinate. So we'll use that to translate our group at the position according to the edge and fair. And we have done that. So once we have done that, we only have groups, and groups in SVG have no specific rendering. They are here only to hold other elements. So we put those groups, so the variable G there holds this selection. So we in G, we will have all those groups. And again, you can see that we didn't do any loop there. We consider the data as if there is only a single element. And this part will be done for all the elements. And G is a selection of all those elements, and we can use it to apply some code to all those elements. And that's what we are doing right after. So those two lines are in fact a loop. We are looping over all the G's there. And for all of them, we open a circle element with the attribute R, which is the radius at the correct size. So if you look at the result for that, I need to switch. You have to switch screens. We have it. You should see the result for that. Okay. And you can activate developer tools in your browser. And what you will see, if you look at the elements there, so it's maybe it's small, but if you look at the elements, now we have an SVG element. Okay. And in this element, we have all the G's that have been added, okay, with the class passenger, with a transformation where the transformation has been computed from the edge and the fair. And if we look in those G's, we have an element which is a circle. Okay. You can look for all of them, you will have this circle. So that's the result of the line G dot append circle and setting the attribute 2.8. Okay. So back to the code there. If we go further, so there was a question about the logarithmic scales, but before that, that the next step where what we wanted was to add some styling. Where did that What is the next step? I don't remember. Okay, so I'm styling now, and so what we do is we use the HTML way of doing styling, so we can define a style that will apply to specific elements in our document, be it some HTML element or SVG element. So at the top of our document, in the style section, we define those two styles. So for elements that have the class set to dead, so that the dot notation there, it tells us that this style will apply to all elements with the class dead. And we set the opacity attribute to .25. And for alive elements, we set the fill opacity so that the way the shape is filled to a very low value and the stroke to black. Okay. So that was the suggestion of the subject. And then to apply those style, what we'll have to do is to set the class attribute on our elements so that the two lines that are added there, make them easier to read for you. So we do the same thing for each element. We compute the transformation and we set the attribute class, but instead of having only a single value, we compute the value of the attribute. So that's why we can put a function there, and the result of the function will be used to set the attribute. So for each element, we look at the survived attribute, and if it's one, since we haven't converted it, we use text. If it's one, the class is set to passenger and alive. We can put multiple values in the class attribute, and if the passenger didn't survive, we use a passenger class and the dead class, and the rest of the code is the same. So just doing that will apply the style to the different elements. So you don't have, for each of the circle there, you don't have to set the opacity attribute and the stroke attribute for each element doing some computation there. You can just set a specific style or a specific class, and it will be used to style the element. So I can show you the result there. So now we have the corresponding visualization. And if we go into our, I can make that bigger. Yeah. If we go into our visualization, so we have our elements, and now they have the class attribute set to passenger alive or passenger dead. And inside, we still have only the circle. The circle has no specific style. In fact, the style is applied because of the class of the group element. And you can look there that because it has the class alive, then fill opacity is set to 0.01 and stroke is set to black. Okay. If you have question, please ask your question. Don't hesitate to interrupt me or to ask your question in the chat. It's quite hard for me to know if I'm going too much into details or if that's okay for you. So the more feedback I have, the best it is. So don't hesitate. If it's too fast, ask. If it's too slow, ask. Just tell me. Okay. For the next step, what is interesting there? So in the next step, we have to use squares or circles to show if we have men or women. So you can see that for until now, we had this part adding a circle to all groups, so to all G elements. And so now we want to have a special cases to add circle or a rectangle. And to do this special casing, we cannot use the same thing as before because the happen does not take a function. So we have to know if it's a circle or a rectangle. And moreover, circle and rectangles do not have the same attributes. So we have really to special case this part. And to do that, we can use filtering. So that's the next version there. The start of the code is the same. We produce the groups. So that really is the same code. But what we do, instead of adding circles to all of the G's, we use, so in the G variable, we have all the groups, so a G element for each passenger. And what we can do after that is, remember, when we do some G.happen, we are basically doing a loop. And we can filter the element of the G's using the filter function. And this filter takes as an argument a function. So maybe I'm too quick on that. This notation with the arrow there is a way to write very simple functions in JavaScript. So that's exactly equivalent to passing the function that takes a D as an argument. And where the body is return the value that we compute. So that's just a shortcut. The notation with the arrow is just a shortcut for the definition of a function in JavaScript. A function with a single return in it. So I will highlight the two parts there. So those lines, maybe I can put that like that. I will comment this one, but the two lines are exactly equivalent. Okay, that's only a notation, a shorter notation for defining a function that takes an argument D and returns this value. So this function will return true for elements that have the sex attribute set to female. And then for those elements, so now after this filter, the rest of the line will apply only to the element where the filter function evaluates to true. So we add circles only for the element that the G element, where the associated data of the G element adds the attribute sex set to female. And then we do the same to the G's. So filter does not remove any element. It just applies to the rest of the line. Okay, so in the G's, we still have all the elements created before. Okay, so now we take only the male, so the G SVG element that have been created for a data record that has the sex attribute set to male. And for those, we append a rectangle to our graph. Okay, so if we have a look I will switch again to the visualization. We have a look at our own visualization. Okay. Now we have squares and circles. And if we go into the DOM, so we have some circles and we have some rectangles. So this one is a circle and this one is a rectangle. So we have groups again. We have one group per passenger, but in some of them we have a circle and then some others we have a rectangle. Okay. And then the last part was using a log scale on the vertical axis. And the log scale is just like linear scale. We have a domain and a range. And the only difference is that the mapping is not linear. It uses a logarithmic function. There is still a small gotcha there in the sense that you probably know that you can't compute the log of negative or zero values. So that's why we have to change domain for our vertical axis, that it starts at one, for example. And we also have to filter out, because in the data set, we have some element where the fare is equal to zero. So we have to filter them out, because if you don't filter them out, then this recode will work. But for the corresponding element, the translation that we compute there, you will get not a number there. And then the browser will have to choose how to render this SVG element. So some of them use zero value instead. So you will have some element at the same place in your graph, or depending on how your browser handles that, having an invalid SVG can lead to different results. So to be sure, we just filter them out. Okay. And in this part, we also add a title to the elements. So the title element in SVG is just some text, and it has the property that you can hover an element in the visualization and the title will pop up. So that's an easy way to have some pop-ups in your graphs. And then the remaining there in the part that allows to draw the axis. So D3 provides some helpers to draw the axis. Axis bottom, if you want to have the value under on the axis. Axis top for the values at the top, and so on. You pass to the axis the scale, and it will do everything that's needed. So you can, of course, you can customize that, but by default, you will have something quite good already. And then this x-axis, this object, is able to be rendered as SVG. So there is some magic there. You just have to add a G group to your SVG and to put that group at the position that suits you. Okay. So here, to have it at the bottom, so the horizontal axis, you want to have it at the bottom of your chart. So you have to translate it. Horizontally, you don't want to translate it because you want it aligned with the actual pixels. But vertically, you can choose the position. And here, to choose the position, since our vertical axis start at 1, we use the vertical scale object to compute what is the position of the value 1 in pixels. So 1 is not in pixels. So for a sphere of 1, so the lowest sphere that we have chosen, what is its position in pixels? So that's for the vertical position there. And for the vertical axis, and then, sorry, the call there is the magic that will use the x-axis that we have just defined to be transformed into SVG. And for the vertical axis, we put it so the we don't have to translate it vertically because it's at its position, but horizontally, I use the value minus 1 to have it on the left of the graph. And that's it for the... So what is interesting there is the filtering to apply different transformation to different data elements. If you want to do more complex filtering, you have another possibility, and I can show you that in the on the CARS dataset. So you weren't expected to do the CARS practical work, but I can show you some of the techniques there. So for example, in the CARS dataset, the ID I will show you the first. I will show you the graph there. So in the CARS dataset, we have some CARS, and we have as a property the horizontal axis. I don't remember which one it is, and the vertical axis. I don't remember. What are the attributes? I can have a look. So for the horizontal axis, that's the weight of the cars. And for the vertical axis, that's the miles per gallon of that you can ride with this car. And the color use the year, and the shape use the origin of the car. Okay, European, Japanese, and from the USA. Okay. And for that, so that this part which is interesting, we have to add rectangles or circles or a cross to our element. So that's basically the same thing add with the Titanic for female and male, but I can show you another way to do it. So you have to switch there. So the idea is that you can, so if you have things more complex than just using an attribute, which is not the case there, but this technique can be used in more complex cases, you can define a function that for a specific data element will compute what SVG element should be added to the group. There is something magic going on there. You can get the group with this D3 magic thing. So S will be the group associated to the data that we will be handling. And then you can switch there on the origin of the car, and you can append a circle when the car comes from Europe, append a rectangle when the car comes from Japan. And for the cross, I use the path element of SVG when the car comes from USA. So this function has to be applied to each element of our data set. And to do that, we do the same kind of loop. So we produce some G's. For each of the element of our data set, we append a G group with the correct transformation, with some attribute set. And then at the end, for each of them, we apply the function mark, which is the function we have defined right before. Okay. So we can apply a function that will add some specific element to each of the element in a loop. Okay. So that's another way to do. So I know that's a lot of information for you, but what I will do is I will put those codes online so that you can use it as an example, so that you can take some time to look at this code. Okay. If you have questions on that, so I have a long question in the chat that I will answer asynchronously later. So if you have questions on that, feel free. And what we'll do now is that we will go have a look at the project dataset, if you are okay with that.
Can I ask you one question?
Yes.
You had a different data set here, I mean HTML documents. So how did you run this? Because I'm completely new to this, and because you have a .html 1, 2, 3, 4. So how did you run? Because
so you don't have to run the visualization. In fact, you have to run a web server, and okay. That's explained in the practical work subject. So you, when you get the data, you have to run an HTML server using so in the subject, it's explained using a Python, but there is also a link to, I think it's in the questions that are answered.
Yes. I mean to say that you have a different HTML file. So how will the wave that which you run will know that which file to take? Suppose one file, first file, second file, third file, because as I think the file that you have is like, now I can understand is that your file have different attributes, I mean, different things. So like one at a time. So how do we know that, how does it know? Like, because once your file was only black and white and later color, so I mean later you, like with the all, so
the one you will see in your browser is the one that you open. So when you go to the link to the online version, you have a file name, and if you change this file name, it will go to if you have other HTML file, you just use the address of the other HTML file. Maybe I don't understand your question. Maybe we can sort that later in private, so that I can go.
Okay.
I can go on with the lecture.
Okay.
So where was I? Okay. Okay, so on the web page of the subject of the project there, you have a link to the repository with the data set, and there is a README there that gives you information about the data. So there are four files, and for one with the missions, one with the users, one with the places, one with the countries, and you have the definition of the fields that are in those datasets. Okay. So you will have to read that. I won't go through it now. But what we can do now is to show you. So I've put with those data sets two, let's say, visualizations, in fact, two samples on how to use those data sets with this. So the first one, just I can show you the result, just computes a list of the user, displays a list of the user. So you will see if you look at the elements, you have one element per user. So it's not SVG, it's just a regular HTML. Okay. And to do that, we loop through the users table. And so that's a basic example. Let's switch to that. Where we load the user data set for each of the record, we compute a more friendly JavaScript version of this record. So for example, as the first line starts with a dash there, we transform it. And now each element will have an attribute user ID, name, house, and institution. And then what we just do is for all those elements, we add a new div to our HTML, and the text is computed from the data. We put the user ID, the name, the house, and if, so that's a substitution that is more complicated than before, because it's not just a value. We compute if the institution is empty, then we add the empty string, else we add the institution with the parents. Okay, so that's programming in JavaScript. It's not very intuitive, but again, that's an example that you can reuse. And the next visualization is more interesting. So I can show you the visualization. Let's switch back to the web browser. And this visualization is interactive. So the idea there is that for each of the user, we have computed the carbon dioxide emissions. Then we have sorted the user in ascending order using this attribute. And then we have accumulated those emissions. So horizontally, you have all the user from the less emissions to more emissions. That's why the curve is increasing and the slope is also increasing. And the vertical axis shows the amount of emissions, so the total amount of emissions. So let's first look at how the graph is constructed before going into the interaction, because you can see that there is an interaction. You can put the mouse cursor on the curve, and then it tells you with two lines how the distribution is split at this point. So for example, there, at this point, you know that on the left of the cursor, there are 80% of the people in the lab, and on the right, you have 20% of the people in the lab. And the other line, the horizontal lines, tell you that below this line, you have 25% of the emissions, and above this line, you have 75% of those emissions. So that's a basic visualization, but using interaction, you can start to understand that, for example, 80% of the people in the lab do emit only 25% of the emissions, and the top 20% of the user in the lab are responsible for three quarters of the emissions. So that's a first insight that you can get from this data set. Okay. And the interaction allows to explore, for example, if you want to know the top 1% of the member of the lab are responsible for 10% of the emissions. So, okay. So let's go back to the code. There. So where to start? Okay. We have scales as usual. And what is different there is that we will have to load different data sets. So at least three. I show you in the code, I put the code for loading all the data sets, but to build the graph on the right, we have to know the users, we have to know the missions, and the missions have a specific field for the place, so the destination of the mission, because there are several missions that goes to the same places, to the same place, so the places are put in a different file. So we will have to do some joining between those data sets. So this example is interesting for that. It shows you how to do some joining and some computation in JavaScript. And the first thing we have to do is to load all the data sets. And that's a way to do. So we use, that's a JavaScript thing, promise. We ask to do that and to wait for the result of those four actions. And the four actions are loading the files. So it will launch the loading into the browser. And once these three are the four data sets, will be ready to do some visualization. Okay. So once the data is ready, we split it into four variables. So because since we are waiting for four data sets, the data there will have four elements with the four data sets in it. So we split that, we put the missions into missions, we put the first element into users, the second element to places, and then countries. And to make it easier for the rest of the code, you can see that the user, the first attribute is a user ID, and the user ID is used in the mission file for each mission to tell who is the user for that mission. And that's a number, basically. And so what we do there, in that we will use this number as a key in the user dataset. So we don't want to have in the user just a list, but we want to have some easy way to get from the user ID the user itself. So that's an associative container, like a dictionary or HMAP or things like that. And in fact, in JavaScript, objects themselves are dictionary. So we use just a regular object type from JavaScript. And we add to this object entries where the key will be the user ID and the value will be the whole record. And using that, we will be able to do lookups into users. Using only the user ID, we will be able to retrieve the whole record for the user. Okay. We do the same for the places, where the key is the place ID, and for countries where the key is alpha, that's two characters, key code for the country. And then from that, we compute the emission for each user. So we create a table. For each user, the key will be the user ID and the value will be zero. So we start with an empty array with a record for each user, and for each user we have a zero. And then we loop through the missions, and for each mission, we take the emission for the user of this mission. So that's zero, that will be zero the first time. And we add to that the emission. So to compute that, you will have to look to the description of the file, but we use for the mission, we have a CO2 attribute, which tells you how much is emitted per kilometer. So we have to find the distance. And for that, we do a lookup into the places map, so the places dictionary, using the place ID. And so that will be a place, and a specific place has a distance attribute in kilometers. And since this will be in kilogram per kilometer, if we divide that, we have a result in tons of CO2. Okay. So we loop through all the missions and we update the emission table while doing that. So emissions is now an associative array that maps user IDs to emissions. We don't care anymore about the user ID, so we transform that into a list of the values. Okay. And then we sort this list in ascending order. And then what we want is not the values, but the cumulative sum of the value. And for that, we use D3, cum sum function, which do the cumulative sum. Okay. And so those lines there prepare the dataset and do some computation using the dataset. So I'm aware that those lines are not easy. And again, that's an example where there are enough details so that if you want to do other computations by yourself, you will know how to do. Again, you don't have, for the project we'll see later, but for the project, you can use other technologies. You can you can, for example, for this kind of computation, you can prepare another file with a scripting language like Python or anything you may want to do the actual computation instead of doing it in JavaScript. And then you can later use those data sets that you have computed by yourself in the visualization. You don't have to do all the computation in JavaScript. That's your decision to make on how to prepare the data and how to do the rendering and so on. So that's just an example of how to do. Okay. Then the rest is more classical. We have two axes, so we can set their domain. What is different there is that we don't have a scatter plot. Instead, we have a line to draw. And for that, D3 allows, give some tool that will compute the point on the line, and so that we can use it as an SVG attribute. So the line there in D3 has two functions, X and Y, and you pass to them a function that will be able to compute the horizontal and vertical position of each point of the line. And until now, we had only a D attribute that's for the each data record. But in fact, if you use a function with two arguments, the second one is the index into the data set, so the number in the data set. So we can use it for the horizontal position, and the actual data, we can use it for the vertical position. And the actual line is, so SVG element is a path, and we use the array that we computed right before as data for this path, and the attribute use the line, so it will use the X and Y that tells how to compute the X and Y for the different point of the path. So it's a kind of magic, but with those lines will produce the continuous line on the graph. And then we can set an axis at the bottom with some text. We can set an axis on the right with some label to know what are the units of the axis. And then here we have the magic of the interaction. So that the interesting part in this one, we put into variables so that it's more easier, so it's that it's easier after the bounds of the X and Y axis, because we'll use it for the cursors that follow the mouse. And here we define those cursors. So a cursor is a G group, so the vertical one. And in this cursor, we'll add a line, so that the line that splits the graph in two with the two numbers, I can show you back so that we are sure. So what I call a cursor is the horizontal and the vertical lines that follow the mouse. And you can see that they are not just a line, they have there are values displayed at both ends with a small backtick to tell you which side is the value. Okay. And to do that, so that the part we are looking at right now, to do that, so we have a group. In the group, we put a polyline, so that just a line with some points, and the points are computed using the values x and y. Okay. We put some text at each end of the cursor. We do the same for the vertical cursor. And we add an element to our graph, which is a rectangle on top of our graph. And if we do that, then we won't be able to see our graph. So we use an opacity of zero so that this element is not visible. But we add this element because a way to have interaction is to handle mouse event occurring on SVG elements. So we put a rectangle on top of our graph so that we'll be able to receive mouse events. So when the mouse is over this rectangle, then we will be able to do to have some code of ours executed by these three. And this code will have to move the two cursors. And that's the part there. So what we tell JavaScript there is that for our element BG for background, when a mouse move event occurs, this function will be executed. So as soon as the move on the graph, this function will be executed. What we do is that we get the position of the mouse cursor. So this position is in pixels. And what we want is that we want to put back this position into the unit of the axis, so in the unit of the attributes, tons of CO2 or the ID of the user, the rank of the user. And for that, our scales are able to invert. So scales normally take some data attribute and transform that into a specific domain, so into pixels there. The invert function takes some pixels and transform that into user and ton of CO2. Okay. Then there is some code there that from a specific position on the graph find the closest point on the line. So it's not exactly the closest point on the line. Actually, what we do is to compute the intersection between a line going from the top left corner of the graph to the mouse cursor, and we compute the intersection of this line with the actual curve. So I won't go into details, but that's what we are doing there. And then we compute the proportion of users, the proportion of emissions, and the last lines there transforms our cursor, so set the position of the cursor accordingly, and change the text so that we have dynamically updated the labels at the end of the cursor with the proportion of the user and of the emission. So this code is a bit complicated, but still, I think it's a simple visualization that covers most of what you will need if you use D3. So it covers loading the data, working on the data to join between the different tables, and doing some interaction. I hope that it wasn't too hard to follow. Maybe you have some questions. I have to look at to check the time. Okay, I've been really long on that. But I hope it's useful. Any question on that? For the questions, you can also use the so there is a link to Mattermost, which is a chat where you can ask questions. And what is interesting is that you once the lecture is finished, the questions there are still in the chat, and I can answer to the questions on the chat later on, and then you will get the answer for everybody. So that's a way. That's also a way to ask questions. Right. Okay. So we'll move on to the lecture. Just briefly. Okay, I'm back there so I can stop the video. So last week, so I have no feedback at all. Was it useful, this presentation of the data set and the visualization, the example of visualizations? Well, I hope so.
Yeah, it was. Actually, we will discover when we try to do some visualization.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe you have questions about the project. Oh, I can, before going back to the lecture, I can go into more details for the project. That's a better idea, I think. So let's go back there. And let's switch on the video. Okay. Yes, exactly. So the web page for the project, I've put some more details. So the idea is that from that data set, you will have to produce visualizations. And before diving into designing and coding visualizations, in fact, a visualization has no point if you don't have a question to answer. So we are doing some exploratory analysis. So we want to discover the data set. So we start with questions. You may wonder, my main question was, well, how are the emission distributed among users? And that's why I did the visualization that I just presented to you. Okay. So the first step will be for you to formulate some questions. Okay. And I've put some questions there. Okay. And just to, so you can talk those, you can take those questions, and but you, I want you to also consider questions on your own. And the question may fall into different categories. For example, you may want to get some global insights. So the first one is the one I just for which I designed this visualization. So how are the emissions distributed? You can you may wonder how the travel distance are distributed, how the durations are distributed, and so on. Okay. You may also want to focus on subsets. So for example, remember in the dataset, our users are sorted into houses, and the houses are sorted into regions, so that the research group and the main team in the lab. And so you may want to focus on specific part of the population. So you may want to be able to filter, and even to filter interactively. You may want to start with a so later on, but you may want to focus on a specific population. So there is a question in the chat, how many questions should we formulate? I have no specific number for that. I mean, maybe 5 to 10. I will add that into the subject if you want to have very guided guidelines. I will add some numbers into the the web page, maybe 5 to 10, something like that. The thing is, in the end, you will probably not design a visualization for each of those questions. Maybe you will select some specific questions. So with the questions, you can choose as many questions as you want, everything that you don't restrict yourself in the questions. And another category, which is the comparisons. That's something interesting. How can we compare compare two different populations, for example? For example, in the users, you have ranks. Ranks are, if we have a junior researcher or interns or PhD students, or if you have a assistant professor or full professor or emeritus professor, and maybe it has an impact on their emission, for example. So there is a question about the mapping. No, the mapping will go after. First, just focus on the questions. Okay, don't think of the visualization yet. I know it's hard to not focus on visualization yet, but let's focus on the questions. The next step will be for you to design some visualization. So designing a visualization is not coding a visualization. Designing is defining the mapping. So that's really a table with which attribute corresponds to which value. And it's more than that, because you can think of the interaction too. We haven't seen yet in the lecture how to consider interaction, and that's a difficult question, in fact. But to do that, you can do some drawings. For example, you can draw the visualization, by hand on paper using pencils, and you can draw the different steps of the interaction and add some text like, okay, if the user does that, then the visualization will transform into this one. And so, so like a storyboard, in fact, to describe the interaction. So that's the part on designing the visualization, okay? So for that, you will work on your own. And I think it's easier considering the situation for now. So you will work on your own on that. And later, you will put those ideas in common with other people. So you will have to form groups later on, okay? So this part of the project has to be done on your own. I will add the grades for that. So if you see in the table on the schedule there, the first step was 10% of the final grade of the project, which is 1/3 of the final grade. Okay, and I will add the part for the other steps. But basically, you will have for the questions and the design of the visualization, that will be roughly half of the grade, and the 40% or the, I don't know, maybe 40% and 50% of 50% or 40%. The last part of the grade will be for the implementation in groups. Okay. Does that answer your questions? Or any other questions on that? There was a question about the tools that you have to use. You don't have to use D3. I do an introduction to D3 because if you don't know what to use, if you have no previous experience, I think it's a good opportunity and to learn D3. And D3 is the tool that people use to do visualization. In fact, when you want to do visualization in a web browser, okay, it's not that. I mean, it's extensively documented. There are many examples. The hard thing is there is a threshold to get into it, and once you have passed this threshold, it will get easier. And there are a lot of examples. And one problem, probably with D3, that the many examples that you find online can use different versions of D3, which are a bit different with some changes in the API. So it's you may have examples that won't work with the latest version of D3, but the links I provided to you are about going to up-to-date examples. And there are many of them, so you can use them. Do we have to send mail containing questions on design? I will. So on the web page, so there is a schedule there, and each entry is an assignment, and as such, should be sent. Send. Okay, I have to correct that by email at. Okay, so you have to send it by email. And if you have questions if you don't understand or don't know what to do, don't wait till next Friday to ask your questions. I had some questions this morning about people asking, for the assignment, I didn't know how to do and things like that. Okay, that's the first assignment, I understand. But it was given 2 weeks ago, more than 2 weeks ago. And you can ask questions by email, but not the day that you have to send the result to me. Okay. That's it. I will add some details on the schedule. And honestly, for the last part of the project, so working in groups, we'll see how the situation goes, because I'm totally aware that working that forming groups when you are not present in person to form the groups will be difficult. So depending on how the situation changes, if the lockdown is lasts for more than a month, we'll see. Maybe we will reconsider and maybe we won't form groups. Maybe you will have to work on your own. We'll see. So this may change. That's why the schedule is only defined till the 20th of November. We'll see for the next steps. Okay. The assignment, do they have to be submitted before the class on Friday? Yes, that's the idea. Yes, okay, it's not clear. But the date in the table are Fridays, and the idea is that you have to send it by this day. So today, it's okay. Okay. Not necessarily before the lecture, but at least on Friday. Okay.
Excuse me, sir.
Yes.
Can we send the first assignment till today, Friday evening?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, because we couldn't complete it.
No problem. I can wait.
And one more thing, like if we are doing individually the project, maybe like if you could for the design visualizing the last part, if you could extend the deadline, because I think 1 week is too less, because the thing is that we are not compatible with the this one, and I think we have other also projects to submit, so 1 week might be too less if we are doing alone or even in the group. So
I will adapt the instructions depending on the situation. I will keep you updated. Right. And for the differences, we'll see. Because usually, what we do is differences where each project presents the result to the rest of the group, and I'm not sure we'll be able to do that. So we'll see. Okay. It's too late to go back to the lecture. Well, I hope it was useful to spend that time on the project. So next week we'll go back to the normal lecture, and so what we'll do is to have a look at different visualizations so that you can get inspiration. And we will practice doing a visual mapping, and then I will hopefully we'll have the time to see some interactive visualization and what is special about interaction in visualization. Okay. So that's it for today. If you have questions, we still have some. Few minutes, so you can go on, and if not, see you next week, and wish you the best till then. And, as I told you, it's quite difficult for me to do the lecture in front of my screen without seeing you, and I really hope to see you soon in person. And if you are stuck because of the project or for the lecture, don't stay alone. You have to tell me as soon as you have problems. You have to tell me or the heads of the master. You have to tell people that when you are facing a difficulty.
Sir, just I have one question. Actually, based on the guidelines on the webpage, I installed NPM, I installed Node, but I don't know how to use this toolkit in order to do this like a project. Can you please guide how to use this toolkit? I installed NPM, I installed Node. But regarding
you don't have to install npm or Node. You can just launch a Python server, like in the like explained on the subject. You can use npm, but you don't have to. Okay, and if you use npm, I think there is a. On the web page, there is a link to the documentation of D3 that explains how to use npm. Okay, I don't use it, so it's difficult for me to help you on that.
I didn't get the email that you sent a link for Titanic dataset. Just only today before the class, I received from one of my classmates the email that you sent regarding.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Can you send me an email so that I can answer to this one?
I didn't get any response. 2 days or 3 days ago, I sent an email.
Who is speaking?
Ali Raisi.
Okay. How do you spell it? Okay, I've got your mail. I will check on that. Okay, can you just please inform us with any major change in the web page with email? Well, yes, I will do that. I'm doing that, in fact, when there are large modifications. In fact, I send you an email for that. Okay. Please upload the video. Yes, okay, I will do that. And okay, any other question?
Yes, you said that you don't like talking to a screen, a black screen, if you don't see us, and I can imagine this very well. Do you want us to turn on our cameras in Zoom for the next sessions?
We can do that, but in fact, it for the network, it may be, if you have a good network, we can do that, but I don't know. Some of you, I know in other lectures, some of my students use their phone connection. So, but maybe we can do that. People with a good network could turn on the camera so that I have at least a mosaic with some faces, and I can see at least that there are people listening to me. Yeah, that's a good idea. I see in the chat that some of you won't be able to do that, but if some of you can turn on the camera, maybe that's a good idea. Yeah. Okay. So see you next week. Thanks a lot, everybody. I will upload the video as soon as I found how to do that. And See you next week then.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye.